Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1.
Buck Benny, the two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. I do not know why I am wearing a pirate hat and things on this particular episode. It makes no sense, but that's okay. So there are no pirates in this episode. Am I correct, gentlemen?
No.
So anyway, I'll probably lose the hat momentarily. Anyway, we are on to, this is from Dimension X. This is the episode called Dr. Henshaw's sanatorium.
Grinshaw.
I think I called him Henshaw's in the first one we did of this. Bob and I have already talked about this episode previously. We talked about the X minus one episode that we will get into the differences as we go. But we did not have Matt at that time when we did the podcast. And so I thought it'd be fun to revisit it with Matt and chat about it. Also, there are serious differences, or at least a few serious differences, from the Dimension X version and the X minus one version. So this is the Dimension X that was done 5 years earlier. And I think Bob and I are in agreement that it is superior to the X minus one redo. Okay. So Bob, why don't you take us through what happens in the episode without giving too many spoilers, of course, because they're going to listen to it. And maybe give us a little comparison of the two and what you thought was different. So all you, Bob.
So this episode, there's a detective and he's looking into he's driving down the road and there's this hearse and out comes his coffin and finds out that there's the guy in it is actually a stuffed dummy. And so he starts looking into what's happening there and he ends up, at this sanatorium, and there's some nefarious activities happening there that carry you to the end. I think I can't really say much more without giving it up.
Okay.
In terms of differences, I thought this version was much better. A couple of differences. At the end of this episode, he has a partner. That's one of the big differences. The other one is they did in the newer one from 55, they did this weird thing with the voice.
Yeah.
Where his voice kept getting higher and higher, and it became more comical than actually dramatic.
So I'm going to give you guys a little spoiler here. So if you want to listen to the episode first, go ahead, but this isn't much. I mean, at one point of the episode, the characters start shrinking. And we won't tell you like why or whatever happens, but in the remake on X minus one, like Bob's saying, their voices turn into like chipmunk voices, and so they're little hearing them talking. They're like, "Oh no, look at it! It's going to attack us. What are we going to do?" It's just kind of hard to take seriously, and it just if you go back and listen to that podcast that Bob and I did, it's one of the most fun podcasts we did. And when it happens, I think we said something like this: the episode that already wasn't all that great and was kind of off the rails completely went off the rails at that point and completely lost any suspense of disbelief. And you're just like, oh my gosh. So, but in this case, that didn't happen. In this case, when the characters' voices stay the same, and so it just holds up better in that way. Also, there's enough differences, like Bob says, in the plot itself that make this a superior plot to it. And it could be that they had a little extra running time on this because they didn't run in quite as many commercials and that sort of thing. And so maybe they had enough time to pad it out just enough to make it be, instead of a probably the most completely ridiculous, over-the-top episode other than the... Oh, and I should have worn my pirate gear now. Other than the crazy Shanghai pirate one that we all despised or whatever, it's right up there with how bad that is on the X-1 version. On the Dimension X version, I think this would cross the border into a pretty decent episode. Would you kind of agree with that, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, if I had heard this one first, I probably would have been shocked when I heard the second one. I had really no problem with this one. The other one that just, I'd have to go back and listen to it again, but it just disintegrated about halfway through. This one holds together actually pretty well.
Yeah.
And it was actually enjoyable. Yeah, I wish I would have heard this one first, and then maybe I would have, yeah.
And I did not realize there was such a difference between the two. So, yeah, so listeners, I want to listen to both. In fact, what I'll do for you guys, I'll put after we're done talking, right, we'll have the Henshaw that we're supposed to be showing, which is Dimension X, or Grimshaw that we want to show, which is the Dimension X version. But then after that, I'll go right into the X-1 version so that you can, if you want to compare the two, you can. Matt, you're fresh to this whole thing. I think you've heard both versions at some point, but I don't think you necessarily remember them and everything. What did you think about this one? You came into this one semi-fresh then. So.
Yeah, it had been years. I mean, I have at some point in years of long commutes listened to every episode of both of these shows, but it's been quite a long time. And it didn't really leave any impact on me the first time until you mentioned that you and Bob hated it because of the chipmunk voices. I'm like, I remember the chipmunk voice episode.
The famous chipmunk voice episode, yes.
I didn't remember anything else that struck me, but I'm like, when you said the chipmunk voices, I'm like, I remember that episode. That was almost unlistenable. Well, it was beyond unlistenable. It really was unlistenable.
Yes. Well, it was the only thing, the redeeming quality of it was like watching a car crash, and you were riveted, like, how crazy is this going to get? And yeah, and it was just bad, bad, bad. It seemed like something that they would like we should be talking about, like on what's that theater they have with the robot and things where they talk about
Mystery Science Theater.
Yes, it seemed like a Mystery Science Theater level show. Yes, but go ahead, Matt. So, whatever else you want to say.
Yeah, I mean that version of it takes a just okay story that doesn't quite fit the medium terribly well, and in attempting to make an audio component to it, they just, like you said, it becomes a train wreck because they tried to use, okay, it's theater of the mind, it's all, you got to do everything with audio, and so they tried and failed spectacularly. One of the things that I thought listening to this type of story was, like you said, with a person shrinking, was it lends itself so much better to either a visual media, like a movie, or, you know, the best version of it, of course, is comes up in Showcase Comics, and you get the Atom story, where he starts out as kind of a science experiment, and then ends up being a superhero. But I think the whole shrinking thing works better as a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids movie kind of thing, where everything is more, or in a comic book where everything's visual, right? Right. Or not everything, but a large component of it is visual, and you're actually seeing somebody terrorized by what to them looks like a 10-story tall cat.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, trying to portray that through audio only.
Correct.
So
correct.
It's a hard story to portray on the radio, I think, you know, as a, you know, if it's just a written story, you've got a lot more visual descriptor. Even if you're, you know, even if without pictures, you're reading the story, they can be much more descriptive of the setting, and it comes across a lot better.
Well, and let me dovetail on the comic book reference, because I have not done this before or tried to do this, but let me rack my brain here a little bit, because I will say that there is another comic book version that I think did a really nice job of it, that I really enjoyed the story. And I want to say maybe it's called something like The Microcosm, something like that. It's an EC from the EC Comics. It is either in their Weird Science Fantasy or Weird Science I want to say it's like one of the first issues, maybe one of the first two or three issues of one of those two series. I want to say Weird Science. And the story, it starts with the scientist or whatever starting to shrink himself, and he's trying to use the phone to call people and can't lift up the phone after a while, and no one's coming to help him, and he's trying to get people to help him, and he keeps shrinking and shrinking. And then I think after a while people do come into the room, but he's so small that they can't see him. And then he keeps shrinking. And this is where, to me, it gets interesting. He shrinks down so that now he's like between molecules and things on the desk. And so he like goes into what appears like an almost alternate dimension, which ties it into the Avengers with not the Avengers so much, but Ant-Man, where they shrink and they go into that other mini universe. And once you go there, you can't come back or whatever. I almost get the feeling that they had read that, somebody had read that comic, or that comic probably was based on a short story by somebody or something, but it just all ties in really well. If you're going to read about shrinking people and you're going to watch Ant-Man and you're going to read the Atom story that Matt's talking about, I think this is that it's a little 8-page story is another interesting piece for that. Anyway, good luck on finding that somewhere if you can. I think Matt is right on the money where he says that this medium, it's hard to do that without kind of making it into a joke. Bob and I, Matt doesn't know this. Maybe someday he'll listen to this. I'm not going to bring it back for us because we've already played it in another episode. But I found an episode, this reminded me of an episode of Suspense where the character is played by a voice actor that is in a lot of commercials and things. He's a voice actor whose voice is automatically sounds like a little kid. He usually plays like a 12-year-old or something, or 8-year-old or something. Anyway, he really goes through, his name is Richard Beals. And Richard Beals, the actor, it's a really tour de force episode for him in that Suspense, because he's shrinking and he changes his voice so that it's getting higher pitch, but he's using his own voice. It's not any kind of manipulation to make it be a chipmunky, and so it's not fast or anything. And he just does a really nice job of sounding more desperate and higher pitched. And so he's like, I can't do it with any kind of decent, but he'll be like, hello, hello, help me, I'm getting smaller. And his voice will slowly morph into getting higher and higher as he goes. And it really does work well as a radio show, showing that you can do it as a radio show if you have the right actor, the right script, and doing it the right way. I mean, it's not like you go, oh, that's one of the best episodes of Suspense or radio I've ever heard. But you do say, hey, that was an interesting episode that made it believable that this character was shrinking the whole time. So anyway, that takes us to that. Bob, anything else about this episode that you want to relate, or did I cover it pretty well with all of us?
No, I think you got it. Okay. I think this is a listenable episode, and I think it actually is enjoyable, unlike its counterpart.
Yes, which is amazing how they could totally botch this up and make it worse. Usually you get an X-1 and maybe it's better than the Dimension X because they revisit it and tweak the script a little bit to make it a little tighter. I'm sure with it, they listened to it and said, hey, you know, if we sped up those voices or did them higher pitch, it would actually sound like they're getting smaller. And so I'm sure as the director or whoever's doing it was thinking about it, it made sense. It just, they should have, when they're recording, okay, jettison that, this doesn't work, let's re-record this a little bit. But maybe they didn't have the budget and just said, oh, let's just live with it. Matt, anything else you want to say about this episode, or is that all covered?
No, I was just gonna say that sounds like it feels like when you read something that somebody wrote and then you think, did nobody else read this for you before you published
it? Yes. Or, yes,
like, did you not take a second look at this before you actually put it out there for the ages?
Well, I do get the idea that on Dimension X and X-1, that I know they could not have had a great budget to do what they're doing. It sounds like a number of the episodes were like, when you listen to them, you go, okay, a little more fine tuning and a little rewrite would have really helped this out, but it's sort of, they just put it out there. And so that's why you get into with these episodes that are like, oh, this one was great. Love this week. And then other times it's like, oh my gosh, what a train wreck. Because we've all probably noticed that.
I mean, you are in the 1950s here and looking at science, you know, a lot of people were looking at science fiction as like a lesser genre. It's like, it's, you know, a garbage genre, a kids genre or whatever, even though you're in the height of some of the most brilliant science fiction writing
yes.
of the century.
And luckily this series grabs onto that. Well, otherwise we wouldn't be doing it, right? If this was, we don't do Captain Spaceman on the radio, where we're going to talk about those kind of shows. I mean, they did exist. There was, you know, Captain Video for sure on television.
But I almost, you know, you almost picture like some, you know, your typical executive in their suit in their office that's out of touch with things saying, oh, it's just a garbage science fiction show. We're not giving you any budget. Well, at the same time, they're using that little budget to go out and get the best stories to tell. Yes. But they have to put it out, and, you know, they can't do it every week.
Correct.
With the budget they have, I'm sure they can't afford to always have the best actors, the best writers, whatever, you know, they've got their house writer that does some of the stories, and they've got, you know, sometimes they buy a story from, you know, Heinlein or something, and like, hey, here's a great story I read in Amazing Science Fiction or whatever, let's do this.
Well, and as I've said before,
so it is very
the house writer, very you're right, the house writer is the one who usually botches up the stories. They're going to botch them up, right? But the house writer also is trying to compete with Heinlein, is trying to compete with not Roddenberry. Who am I thinking of? Come on, somebody help me. Well, some of the other famous writers,
Asimov or something, or
it's not Asimov that's on here. It's come on, I got it on my books. Bradbury, Ray Bradbury.
Oh, yeah.
So you're trying to compete with Bradbury, and it's like you shouldn't even be able to attempt this, and yet he does, and he does sometimes. I don't know if he hits it out of the park ever, but sometimes he hits it in the same ballpark as those guys, which is fantastic. But then sometimes he colossally lands on his face, and you would expect that to happen sometimes too. So, well, and heck, sometimes when they're taking a Bradbury story or an Asimov story or any, they can't adapt it very well, and it ends up falling on its face.
We've talked about that a bunch of times, especially when they tried to cram the whole Martian Chronicles into one episode.
Exactly.
You're not able to do justice to a major work in 24 minutes or whatever they had to do it in.
Or when they take a 10-page short story that kind of works as a 10-page short story and they try and pad it out to fill a whole half hour, sometimes you also run into problems that way.
Right, exactly.
So you run into problems either way, yeah.
Or just a story that doesn't translate well to the media.
Yep.
So the two things that really jumped out, like I said, this is a fine episode. It was certainly listenable and interesting, and had evil Nazi scientists and stuff, which is great. Always great.
You can't ever go wrong having evil Nazi scientists. Yeah,
exactly. They're a great bad guy. The thing that jumped out at me right away, two things that one was that, like, they set it up. The beginning of this thing doesn't even sound like a science fiction show. It sounds like a noir detective story. So okay. I like when they set things in kind of almost a little bit off genre or something.
Right.
Like I've always said, you know, when they take the Star Wars universe, I wish, you know, that they would branch out and just tell stories in that set. I mean, you could have a good buddy cop movie set in, you know, when you've got a deep playground, like, you know, a whole universe that they've built. I mean, they could do the same thing in the Star Trek universe, whatever. Like tell a completely different kind of story in that universe.
Right.
Because you could just have a show that's just set in, you know, in a bar in the Star Trek universe, and it's you know, it's always sunny in Andor or whatever.
Yes,
it's always sunny on Andor, and you can totally have that kind of show, but set in the Star Trek universe, I'm always interested in kind of doing a cross-genre kind of thing. So when it started off as like this total, like, 50s hard-boiled detective story. I'm like, okay, that's kind of an interesting start. And the other thing, just it's a total trope, but I loved it when I was a kid. And so when they start with the, you know, this is, you know, it's the found footage kind of thing when it's not really found footage, or the you know, it's up to you, the listener, to decide if this is.
Yes.
With the ravings of a madman. I always liked that stuff. I mean, I ate that up when I was a kid. Like the, it reminds me of the Project Blue Book TV series that lasted for like 5 minutes in the 70s, where it was supposedly, it was like these, you know, guys investigating alien appearances.
Yes.
Supposedly based on real Air Force files or whatever. Like,
Bob and I used to love watching those sorts of things, the UFOs, in search of UFOs and Bigfoot and all that stuff.
Still do.
my wife actually, a few years ago, I got it for me for Christmas because I pointed out this box set of In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy at Costco. And they've really enjoyed revisiting all that because my best friend and I, when I was a kid, we ate that up. We loved that.
Yes. I should see if any of those are on YouTube or anything, because that'd be fun for us to do a podcast about, would be an episode of In Search Of, and then play In Search Of if they exist.
Did you realize Zachary Quinto redid it?
Really? Oh, that's right. And of course, interesting because he's Spock as well. So that's pretty neat to see.
He redid In Search Of?
Yeah, it was on either, I think it was on History. It was either History or
National Geographic, probably.
Yeah, one of those accounts on it was Cable. I watched all episodes. I don't know if they're going to do another season if he's been picked up. He's done.
So it must have been good.
I liked it.
Yeah. Well, what's nice is if they can't get Quinto to do it, they can get Ethan Peck, who plays Spock in Discovery, to do it. So they got multiple Spocks. They still have two Spocks left that they can use. So there you go. But anyway, I think we'll tune out at that point because we got to get into the episode and enjoy. And like I say, I'll play the two up versions of this, the good version first, and then the crazy fun off the rails version second. So enjoy those, and we'll see you guys next week.
Adventures in time and space, told in future tense. Dimension X. What you will hear transcribed in the next half hour represents either a magnificent hoax or the true explanation of the famous Grimshaw Sanatorium scandal, which made the headlines back in 1947. The manuscript upon which this account is based was removed by the New York State Police from a fountain pen cover found in the doorway to Dr. Grimshaw's study. We offer this manuscript as evidence only. Whether it is authentic or not, you must judge for yourself. John Doherty, Hamilton College, Class of 34, member of Theta Alpha. I'm one of those fools who wanted some excitement in life. So instead of going into my father's shoe business, I became a private detective. These are facts. You can check them if you like. The rest of what I write here is so fantastic that I don't expect it to be believed. If anyone should find this manuscript and read it, all I ask is that you notify Miss Millicent Armbruster of 299 Wallace Avenue, Buffalo, that Johnny Doherty is dead. On the evening of July 1st, Miss Armbruster and I were driving to a wedding. Not our own, though I wish it had been. It was Sunday, and in order to avoid traffic, I took the old mill road, single-lane dirt affair that runs past the Gowanus Cemetery.
Johnny, aren't you going too fast?
Not for this road. There isn't a thing around except some tombstones.
Johnny, the gate to the cemetery.
What about
that hearse?
I don't see any.
Johnny, look out! Look out!
It was a big black hearse with no lights on, pulling out of the cemetery. Lucky I had good brakes.
We skidded for about 20 feet and slammed into the back of the hearse. Two rear doors buckled and snapped open. It was a freak. A huge oak coffin with brass handles tipped up and began slowly to slide back toward us.
Oh, Johnny, look! The coffin is sliding out.
Holy moly.
Oh, how horrible.
You stay right here, honey. I'll help the driver with that tank. Hey, you okay in the speed limits, do you, Jack? Now, look, let's not get hung up on who was right and who was wrong. I was going too fast, and you were traveling without lights after dark. Main thing is, nobody's hurt and no damage done, except for that coffin. And I don't suppose the occupant minds too much. Let's see the driver's license and registration. Right here.
Hmm. John Daugherty. Oh, a private eye, huh?
You listen to the radio too much, Junior. Now, if you don't mind, who does this joy wagon belong to?
Gowanda Funeral Service. It's being rented to Grimshaw.
Who?
Grimshaw, from the private sanatorium.
Do you mind if I ask what you were doing after dark, coming out of a cemetery with a wooden kimono?
We're moving one of Grimshaw's patients to a new grave.
Uh-huh. Do they always travel like this?
Now, look, Hawkshaw, how about skipping the third degree and giving me a hand getting the box back in the wagon, huh?
Good pleasure. Better screw on the cover again. It's going to slide off.
Let's get it in the hearse first.
Okay, Junior. You get on that end.
Ready?
Lift.
Just slide it, brother. Who's in there, King Kong? Look out for the cover. Hey. I told you that'd happen.
Hey, what's the guy's name, Junior?
Why don't you ask him?
Real wise guy, huh? I've got half a mind to report this accident.
Go ahead. See what gets you. Grimshaw's got a lot of influence around here, mister. A lot of influence. Now, if you'll pardon me, I'll deliver the body.
So long, Junior.
Johnny? Johnny?
I'm coming, honey.
Everything all right, Johnny?
Well, I thought so until a few seconds ago. Listen, baby, can you sit here in the car for another 5 minutes?
Oh, we're due at the wedding in half an hour.
I won't be long.
Where are you going?
For a stroll through the cemetery.
Oh, hey, Johnny, stop making jokes.
Honey, when we lifted that coffin back on a meat wagon, I got a good look inside of it.
Oh.
Exactly how I felt. I figured we'd knock the stuffing out of the corpse. Only I didn't expect the stuffing to be sand.
What?
Yes. It wasn't a body. It was a dummy stuffed with sand, a dummy with a wax face.
Johnny!
Which brings up an interesting question. Who's supposed to be in that box? And just where is the dead man spending his time? Sometimes in my business, when things drop off, you have to go out and dig up new clients. Well, my next case was a gentleman named Harlan Ward, Sr., the wealthy automobile manufacturer. I had gotten his name off his son's tombstone.
Are you trying to tell me, Dorothy, that my son Harlan was never buried at Gowanda Cemetery?
Exactly, Mr. Ward.
Why?
Maybe if you'll tell me the circumstances surrounding your son's death, I can help answer that.
My son was a rather impetuous young man, tall, good-looking. After his graduation from Princeton, he began drinking quite heavily. After he got into a couple of scrapes, we sent him to Dr. Grimshaw's sanatorium in the hope that he could be cured. While my wife and I were in Europe, we received word that he had died. He was buried at Gowanda in our absence. Last week, my wife and I decided to have his body removed to the family vault here at Short Hills.
How did your son die, Mr. Ward?
Suicide. He slashed his wrists at a sanatorium.
You never saw the body?
No. We couldn't get back from Europe in time.
I see.
See here. How do I know this whole thing isn't a plan to fleece me? How do I know that you didn't remove the body yourself?
You don't. But you're a rich man, Mr. Ward, and you're perfectly willing to take a chance that I'm on the level and that your son may still be alive.
You sound very sure of yourself, Mr. Doherty.
My fee is $2,000 retainer plus expenses.
What sort of expenses?
However much it costs to take the cure at Dr. Grimshaw's sanatorium. What do you say, Mr. Warren?
All right, Doherty. My secretary will send you a check in the morning.
Good. Oh, one other thing.
What's that?
I want a photograph of your son, a good one.
I think that can be arranged. Look here, Doherty. If I cooperate, how do I know that you won't run off?
I won't guarantee it. On the other hand, I might have to get myself killed on this job. We both take a risk, Mr. Ward. Dr. Grimshaw's sanatorium was just outside Gowanda, and it was strictly for the 400 at $60 a day. Most of the cases were nervous breakdowns and alcoholics. I committed myself as a dipso, and just to make it convincing, I stopped at five or six bars on the way over. I was interviewed by Grimshaw himself, a small man with a fringe of white hair. He seemed on the level. And yet, there was something just the slightest bit phony about the whole deal.
You understand, Mr. Doherty.
That's not my real name, of course. Social reasons.
We understand. Our paid clientele is very select. Our rates are rather high.
You'll be paid in cash and in advance, Dr. Grimshaw.
You'll find us most sympathetic.
How long does a cure usually take, Doctor?
Well, that, of course, depends on the degree of alcoholism. This is my assistant, Dr. Voynow.
How do you do?
How do you do?
We are accepting Mr. Doherty as a patient. Better place him in the ward with Mr. Kay and Mr. Crakey. Mr. Kay is a long-term patient. Mr. Doherty, highly intelligent man, formerly a professor of plant pathology. Mr. Crakey suffers mild delusions. I think you'll find him rather amusing.
After about 3 days, my roommates, Arthur Kay and Crakey, got used to me, and we even began to play three-handed bridge. Kay was a chronic dope addict, an intelligent, sensitive man. Crakey was nothing but a clown. He kept a big black cat named the Professor, which he talked to as if it were human.
And so I said to her, "My dear Countess, if you don't like the company of my cat, then you don't like me." She looked at me as if I were insane, but of course the joke was on her because I was. Eh, Professor?
You'll have to forgive Count Crakey, Mr. Doherty. When you've been here as long as I have, you'll get used to him.
Do you like cats, Mr. Doherty? I do hope you like cats, since we are to have adjoining rooms. The Professor is very sociable and excellent company.
Except when he kills birds and deposits them in your bed. He's nothing but a feline murderer, as far as I'm concerned.
Ah, see? You have insulted him.
Come here, Professor. Let's make friends. How about giving me your paw? Hey, fetch me, you black devil.
You insulted him. You hurt his feelings.
Well, keep him away from me.
It will be a pleasure. I would advise you not to insult him again. Count Crakey is not altogether without influence here, as Mr. Kay will inform you. Good afternoon. And evening.
Is he always as nuts as that?
Ever since I've been here.
Why did they let him keep that black Satan?
I don't know. I suppose Grimshaw wants to pamper him. He's been here since they opened the place, I understand. Spends about 3 hours a day getting therapy from Grimshaw.
What's his problem?
Manic depressive. A little paranoid, too.
How long have you been here, Arthur?
At Grimshaw's, 2 years. I left for a while, but I couldn't stay away from the junk, so I committed myself again.
Did you happen to know a patient here named Harlan Ward?
Why do you ask that? Did you know him?
I met him socially a few times. I understand he died here.
So the newspapers said. I wouldn't know.
Suicide, wasn't it?
Was it?
You're being pretty careful, aren't you?
Mr. Doherty, what would you say if I were to tell you that I don't believe Harlan Ward is dead?
What makes you so certain?
Harlan Ward used to share this room with us. He slept in the same bed you now use.
I see.
He was an alcoholic. Doing quite well, too, from what I could observe. We all expected him to go home soon. Then one evening he had a violent fight with Crakey. Crakey accused him of snooping or something. Later that night, Grimshaw and Voynow took him out.
Where?
They take all the special treatment cases to the charity clinic. It's that small building on the other side of the stone wall. I think they do their surgery cases there.
Why did they take him there?
I don't know. Confinement, I guess. A few days later, We read about his death. Suicide, they said. Why do you think he's still alive, Arthur?
This.
About a month ago, I was in the garden next to the wall that separates us from the charity clinic. Suddenly, I thought I heard a sound like a child whimpering. It stopped. A moment later, this note came over the wall, wrapped around a stone. Then I'm certain I heard a blow and a scream, again like a child.
What does the note say?
Help me, for God's sake, Harlan Ward. I haven't told anyone yet for fear Grimshaw and Voyner might find out. It might just be some insane prank by one of the charity cases. And yet...
But why should Dr. Grimshaw want to pretend Harlan Ward is dead?
I'm not an oracle, Mr. Doherty.
What about this charity clinic?
I've always been curious. Grimshaw and Voyner make sure that no patient goes there unsupervised. Many of those who've been taken across, like Harlan Ward, I've never seen again.
Arthur, how'd you like to have some fun?
Like what?
Like sneaking out tonight and going over the wall. What do you say? It'd break the monotony a little.
I don't know.
If there's something fishy going on, it'd be better to find out now, wouldn't it?
I suppose there's no real harm in it.
Of course not. I'd go alone, but I'll need help scaling that wall. Will you do it?
All right. I'll go with you.
It was shortly after midnight when Kay and I slipped out of the room and made our way out to the garden. Count Crakey was snoring soundly when we left. The wall was about 8 feet high, but we made it without too much trouble.
Count! All clear. Give me your hand and I'll lift you.
No, careful when you drop. Ready?
Go ahead. There's a charity building over there. The one with the lights in the basement window.
Come on. We'll make a run across the driveway and hide in that clump of bushes alongside the building. Ready?
All right.
Kay, hold it. Drop flat.
What's the matter?
Let's crawl over toward the window with the light. Maybe we can see something.
I suppose you've got your next.
Listen.
Take it easy.
Sounds like Grimshaw. Let's get closer.
Can you make out what he's saying?
Good Lord.
What was that?
Probably some patient having the DTs. I think it came from that basement window.
Let's get over there where I can have a look. Easy. Wouldn't do to get caught now.
Just
see anything?
Easy and relax.
It's some sort of laboratory.
That's right.
I can see Grimshaw and Voyner. And someone else with its back toward me. If we're still, we may make out what they're saying.
Take it quietly. It will be easier.
No!
I warn you.
Please!
It will all be over soon. No! You won't remember anything.
No, I don't want to go!
Voyner, give it to him.
No!
Shut him up, Voyner.
No!
Good Lord.
What is it?
Come on. We've got to get out of here.
What did you see? What did they do to that child?
Arthur, that wasn't a child. It was a midget. The smallest midget I've ever seen.
What were they doing?
Trying to give it some sort of injection. When it resisted, Voyner knocked it out.
Well, what do you suppose they were doing to it?
I don't know, Arthur. All I know is that when it fell, it had the face of Harlan Ward. All the way back to our room, my brain was working like a pinball machine. Only the score wouldn't add up. The pieces were there, all right. A crazy old doctor, a brutal assistant, the private sanatorium, and a midget with a dead man's face. But I couldn't figure it out. I thought that when I got back to our room, I'd have some time to think about it. But I'd forgotten about our friend, the happiness boy, Count Crakey.
Ah! What? So I have caught you.
Fine. So you've caught us. Now, how about crawling back into the woodwork like a good little count?
Well, where are you?
Mink hunting. Arthur and I like to go mink hunting at night. Funny thing, though, the mink weren't running very good. The grunion were running like crazy, though, weren't they, Arthur?
Like crazy, Mr. Doherty.
You make fun at Count Crakey. You're lying. I shall report you to Dr. Voyner.
Better not, if you know what's good for you.
So you threaten me. Me, Count Crakey, world champion gymnast and barbell balancer. I shall scream for help. Help!
You heard him?
Just knocked him out.
What do we do now?
Put him to bed. Hope that when he wakes up in the morning, he's forgotten the whole thing.
And if he hasn't?
They won't take him seriously anyway. I don't think Grimshaw would believe him. Besides which, he doesn't know what we actually were doing. Come on, let's get him back into bed. I went to sleep in my own room. And the next thing I felt was the sharp jab of the hypodermic needle in my left arm. I started to struggle, but it was no use.
Take it.
Boyna and another assistant were holding me down. Grimshaw stood over me, the empty needle still in his hand.
That's it. Be useless to struggle, Mr. Doherty. In a moment, your motor nerves will be completely paralyzed.
What's this about, Grimshaw?
I might ask the same of you. My good friend Count Krakey informs me you and Mr. K decided to do some snooping earlier tonight. He followed you and saw you climb the wall.
Crakey's insane.
That is a matter of opinion, Mr. Doherty.
Crakey, hey, what is this?
Perhaps my assistant, Dr. Grimshaw, would be good enough to explain.
Assistant?
Yes. You see, I am the actual head of the Grimshaw Sanatorium.
Grimshaw?
Count Krakey feigns many delusions, Mr. Doherty, but in this case, he's telling the truth. Count Krakey is actually Professor Ernst Hassler. Professor Hassler and I worked together in the Berlin Neurological Institute before the last war.
Unfortunately, my political affiliations with the Third Reich were under investigation after the war by the War Crimes Commission. However, Dr. Grimshaw managed to smuggle me into this country where I masquerade as a mental patient. Thus, we are able to continue certain experiments which were interrupted by the American Army.
I can imagine the sort of experiments you've conducted.
You and your friend, Mr. K, will discover their exact nature very shortly, Mr. Doherty. It's a magnificent opportunity to serve science.
Then I passed out. And the next thing I knew, I was coming to in a different room. I guessed it was somewhere in the charity building because of the angle of the sun through the windows. They had me in a straitjacket and kept doping me until I lost count of time. I don't know how long it kept up. I remember one day being wheeled along a corridor into an operating room and hearing the voices of Boyna, Grimshaw, and Krakey as if from a great distance.
Pituitrin. 4 cc's.
4 cc's.
How are the measurements?
Reducing rapidly.
We'll operate at once. Have Boyna start the anesthesia.
All right, Doctor. Commence.
When I came to again, I had a blinding headache. And after that wore off, a horrible sensation of weakness. I began to wonder if Krakey and Grimshaw weren't doing something to drive me insane because I lost all sense of perspective. The room seemed to grow in size. I don't know how much time passed, but one day Grimshaw came into the room with a bundle in his arms about the size of a newborn baby. The bundle was my friend, Arthur Kay.
Good morning, Mr. Doherty. I brought you a companion. I'm sure you two gentlemen will enjoy each other's company.
Let me out of here. Put me out.
I couldn't believe my eyes until Grimshaw set Arthur down on the bed beside me. It was then that I got the real shock, for I realized that what had looked like a tiny bundle in Grimshaw's arms was actually the same size that I was. Then, for the first time, I began to understand what was happening to us. Arthur Kay and I were being made into midgets. We got the full explanation next morning when the eminent Professor Hassler, alias Count Krakey, came in to gloat over us.
Allow me to congratulate you, gentlemen. How are you feeling?
You stinking monster!
Oh, I'm disappointed, gentlemen. Do you not feel privileged to be a part of an experiment that will place me at the very top rank of the world's endocrinologists?
What are you doing to us?
It has been long established, gentlemen, that dwarfism and giantism result from injury to or malfunction of the pituitary and thyroid glands. The interlock between these glands was thought to be a hormone. I have discovered that this was incorrect. It is an enzyme I isolated some years ago. I was well on the way to synthesis in Germany when the surrender interrupted me. The interruption also limited the number and type of subjects on whom I could experiment. I was forced to find others.
Such as Harlan Ward?
Mr. Ward was only a control experiment.
And now you've done the same to us.
No, gentlemen. For you, I have reserved a special privilege. You, gentlemen, will be the first to test the full effects of the enzyme. In short, I intend that you, Mr. Kay, and you, Mr. Doherty, when the experiment is completed, will emerge as perfectly healthy, normal individuals. Except, of course, that you will be only 5 inches tall.
Days and nights that followed were a living nightmare. A nightmare from which Arthur and I awoke for brief periods to find ourselves in a strange new world. A huge, frightening world where everything was enlarged 100 times. When we finally emerged, we found ourselves imprisoned in a tiny mouse cage. Judging by the relative size of things, we could not have been more than 5 inches tall. Now that our senses cleared, we realized that the experiment was at an end. That from now on, it was either escape or be destroyed.
Another moment, I think I'll have this lock worked loose. And if we escape, then what?
We'll worry about that after we get out of this mouse cage.
Suppose we don't make it.
At least you've written the story on that scrap of paper. Someone may find it and read it.
Nobody will believe it.
Why'd you bother to write it?
I don't know. I suppose I want the world to know what happened to me.
Does it help me push the door open?
Now what?
First chance, getting down to the floor. I think we can make it by sliding down the telephone cord. Are you game?
Go ahead. I'm right behind you.
Easy now. Look out. That does it. Now if we can figure out a way to get out of the room. That should be... Uh-oh, listen. Somebody's coming. It must be Crakey. We've got to hide. There's the grate in the fireplace. He'll kill us if he finds us.
Shh, stay quiet.
Well, my friends, I'm for feeding. I trust that you... So, you have managed to break out. It won't do, you know. There is no way you could have gotten out of the room with the door and window locked. I know you're an idiot. I would advise you to save yourselves trouble and give up. No? Perhaps you are in the desk drawer. Or behind this decanter. Then perhaps in this cupboard. Very well. I shall count to 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You will not get up, eh? Very well, my tiny friends. If you prefer to play the game of cat and mouse, then I shall be happy to furnish the cat.
How long do you figure it'll take him to get downstairs and let the cat into the building? 3 minutes at most. Then we've got 3 minutes to get out. How? All the doors in the mental institution locked from the outside. We need a special key to get out, and then we couldn't reach the lock. I don't know. There must be... Wait a minute. What is it?
John, what? Do you see that thin strand of wire running along the molding?
What about it?
Do you know what it is?
No.
It's the automatic fire alarm.
What about it?
When the alarm is tripped by a fire, all the locks are sprung so that the patients can escape in the rooms.
Are you certain?
Positive. This door is part of the system. If I can work the insulation off that wire and short it before Crakey lets the cat in the building,
let's go.
Here's a tiny sliver of steel from the cage on the floor. I'll work with that. You keep an ear to the door.
Go ahead.
This insulation is tough as raw hide. How much time is it?
Not much.
There's stuff here. Let me help.
What was that?
What?
I thought I heard a door slam.
Mikey couldn't be back so soon.
Hurry up, Arthur, for God's sake.
Stand away. I'm going to short it. Ready?
Okay.
We made it. There goes the door.
Come on, we'll make a run for it down the hall. If we can get to the garden, we've got a chance.
I smell smoke. The short may have actually started a fire. Come on.
Oh, wait a minute.
What's up?
I have to go back. The manuscript.
Don't be a fool. There's no time.
Come on. You go ahead. I'll catch up.
Hurry up. We'll wait in the hall.
Only a second. I've got it. Come on. There's nothing to stop us now. Arthur, where are you? It's funny. Arthur? Arthur? Arthur, what happened to you?
This is the record found in a fountain pen cover in the burned-out hallway of Grimshaw Sanatorium. There is nothing to add, except that the fire which destroyed the sanatorium and killed so many of its occupants, including Dr. Grimshaw and Dr. Voyna, was definitely of incendiary origin. It is believed by the fire chief that some small creature, either a mouse or possibly a cat, chewed the insulation off the wire and short-circuited the system. The two patients, John Doherty and Arthur Kay, vanished completely after the fire, and their remains were never found. Whether the manuscript which you have just heard is authentic, or whether it was the work of one of the more demented inmates of the sanatorium, we leave to your judgment.
You have just heard another adventure into the unknown world of the future, the world of Dimension X.
Next week on Dimension X, and the moon be still as bright, the story of the first despoilers of the planet Mars, the men from Earth.
Tonight, Dimension X has transcribed Dr. Grimshaw's Sanatorium, adapted for radio by George Lefferts from an original short story by Fletcher Pratt. Featured in the cast were Carl Weber as John Doherty and Roger DeCoven as Arthur Kay. Your narrator was Norman Rose. Music by Albert Berman. Engineer Bill Chambers. Dimension X is directed by Edward King.
Your National Guard is a strong, well-knit military organization of men from every state and territory in the nation. No matter what emergency faces our country, a National Guardsman has insured his future. He's trained to handle himself if the going gets tough. And at the same time, he's learned new skills to help his civilian career. Regular Army and Air Force pay scales apply to every hour of training a Guardsman takes. So men, if you're over 17, join the National Guard. Keep your guard up. Enjoy Bob Hope and Groucho Marx, coming soon on NBC.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2. X-1, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents
X-1.
Tonight's story, Dr. Grimshaw's Sanatorium. What you will hear in the next half hour represents either a magnificent hoax or the true explanation of the famous Grimshaw Sanatorium scandal which made the headlines back in 1947. The manuscript upon which this account is based was removed by the New York State Police from a fountain pen cover found in the doorway to Dr. Grimshaw's study. We offer this manuscript as evidence only. Whether it is authentic or not, you must judge for yourselves.
My name is John Dougherty. I'm a graduate of Hamilton College, class of 34, a member of Theta Alpha. I'm one of those fools who wanted some excitement in life, so instead of going into my father's shoe business, I became a private detective. These are facts. You can check them if you like. The rest of what I write here is so fantastic that I don't expect it to be believed. If anyone should find this manuscript and read it, all I ask is that you notify Miss Millicent Armbruster of 299 Wallace Avenue, Buffalo, that Johnny Dougherty is dead. On the evening of July 1st, Miss Armbruster and I were driving to a wedding, not our own, although I wish it had been. It was Sunday, and in order to avoid traffic, I took the Old Mill Road, a single-lane dirt affair that runs past the Gowanda Cemetery.
Johnny, aren't you going too fast?
Not for this road. There's nothing around except some tombstones and...
Johnny, the gate to the cemetery.
Well, what about it?
That hearse, look out! Look out!
We skidded for about 20 feet and slammed into the back of the hearse. The two rear doors buckled and snapped open. It was a freak. A huge oak coffin with brass handles tipped up and began slowly to slide back toward us.
Oh, how horrible.
You stay right here, baby. You okay, Mac?
You don't pay much attention to speed limits, do you, Jack?
Now, look, let's not get hung up on who was right and who was wrong. I was going too fast, and you were traveling without lights after dark.
Let's see your driver's license.
Right here.
Oh. Private eye, eh?
Now, if you don't mind, who does this joy wagon belong to?
Gowanda Funeral Service. It's being rented to Grimshaw.
Who?
Grimshaw from the private sanitarium.
Mind if I ask what you were doing after dark coming out of a cemetery with a wooden kimono?
We're moving one of Grimshaw's patients to a new grave.
They always travel like this?
Look, Hawkshaw, how about skipping the third degree and giving me a hand getting this box back in the wagon?
A pleasure. Better screw on that cover again. It's going to slide off.
Let's get it in the hearse first.
Okay, Junior. You get on that end.
Okay. You ready?
Yeah, lift.
Just slide it.
Oh, brother, who's in there, King Kong?
Look out for the cover.
I told you that would happen. It's the guy's name, Junior.
Oh, why don't you ask him, Sherlock Holmes?
A real wise guy, huh? I've got half a mind to report this accident.
Yeah, well, go ahead. See where it gets you. Now, if you'll pardon me, I'll deliver the body.
Everything all right, Johnny?
Yeah, I thought so until a few seconds ago. Listen, Millie, can you sit here in the car for another 5 minutes?
Where are you going?
For a stroll through the cemetery.
Oh, Johnny, stop making jokes.
When we lifted that coffin back on the meat wagon, I got a good look inside it.
Ew.
Yeah, exactly how I felt. I figured we'd knock the stuffing out of the corpse, only I didn't expect the stuffing to be sand.
What?
Yes. That wasn't a body, that was a dummy stuffed with sand, a dummy with a wax face.
Johnny!
Which brings up an interesting question. Who's supposed to be in that box, and, just where is the dead man spending his time? Sometimes in my business, when things drop off, you have to go out and, dig up new clients. My next case was a gentleman named Harlan Ward Sr., a wealthy automobile manufacturer. I'd gotten his name off his son's tombstone.
Are you trying to tell me, Dougherty, that my son Harlan was never buried at Gowanda Cemetery?
Exactly, Mr. Wood.
But why?
Maybe if you'll tell me the circumstances surrounding your son's death, I can help answer that.
My son was a rather impetuous young man. Tall, good-looking. After his graduation from Princeton, he began drinking quite heavily. After he got into a couple of scrapes, we sent him to Dr. Grimshaw's sanitarium in the hopes that he could be cured. While my wife and I were in Europe, we received word that he died, buried at Gowanda in our absence. Last week, my wife and I decided to have his body removed to the family vault here at Short Hills.
How'd your son die?
Suicide.
You never saw the body?
No. We couldn't get back from Europe in time. Now you tell me that his coffin contains a dummy. How do I know this whole thing isn't a plan to fleece me?
You don't. But you're a rich man, Mr. Ward, and you're perfectly willing to take a chance that I'm on the level and that your son may still be alive.
You sound very sure of yourself, Mr. Dougherty.
My fee is a $2,000 retainer plus expenses.
What sort of expenses?
However much it costs to take the cure at Dr. Grimshaw's sanitarium.
$2,000.
Dr. Grimshaw's sanitarium was just outside Gowanda. Most of the cases were nervous breakdowns and alcoholics. I committed myself as a dipso, and just to make it convincing, I stopped at 5 or 6 bars on the way over. I was interviewed by Grimshaw himself, a small man with a fringe of white hair.
You understand, Mr. Doherty.
That's not my real name, of course, social reasons.
We understand. Our paid clientele is very select and our rates are very high.
You'll be paid in cash and in advance, Dr. Grimshaw. How long does a cure usually take?
That, of course, depends on the degree of alcoholism. This is my assistant, Dr. Boyner.
How do you do?
How do you do?
We are accepting Mr. Doherty as a patient. Better place him in the ward with Mr. Kay and Mr. Cakey. Mr. Kay is a long-term patient, Mr. Doherty. A highly intelligent man, formerly a professor of plant pathology. Mr. Cakey suffers mild delusions. I think you'll find him rather amusing.
After about 3 days, my roommates Arthur Kay and Cakey got used to me. And we even began to play three-handed bridge. Kay was a chronic dope addict, an intelligent, sensitive man. Cakey was nothing but a clown. He kept a big black cat named the Professor, which he talked to as if it were human.
And so I said to her, "My dear Countess, if you don't like the company of my cat, then you don't like me." She looked at me as if I were insane. But of course the joke was on her because I was. Eh, Professor? The Professor is very sociable. Excellent company.
Except when he kills birds and deposits them in your bed. He's nothing but a feline murderer as far as I'm concerned.
See? You have insulted him, Mr. Kay.
Come here, Professor. Let's make friends. How about giving me your paw? Oh!
Scratched me, you black devil.
You insulted him. You hurt his feelings.
Well, just keep him away from me.
It will be a pleasure. I would advise you not to insult him again. Good afternoon and evening.
Is he always as nuts as that?
Ever since I've been here.
What's his problem?
Manic depressive. And a little paranoid, too.
How long have you been here, Arthur?
At Grimshaw's. 2 years. I left for a while, but I couldn't stay away from the junk, so I committed myself again.
Did you happen to know a patient here named Harlan Ward?
Why do you ask that? Did you know him?
No, I met him socially a few times. I understand he died here.
So the newspapers said. I wouldn't know.
Suicide, wasn't it?
Was it?
You're being pretty careful, aren't you?
Mr. Doherty, what would you say if I were to tell you that I don't believe Harlan Ward is dead?
What makes you so certain?
He used to share this room with us. He slept in the same bed you now use.
I see.
He was an alcoholic. Doing quite well, too, from what I could observe. We all expected him to go home soon. Then one evening he had a violent fight with Cakey. Cakey accused him of snooping or something. Later that night, Grimshaw and Voyner took him out.
Where?
Where they take all the special treatment cases. To the charity clinic. It's that small building on the other side of the stone wall. A few days later, we read about his death. Suicide, they said.
Just what makes you think he's still alive, Arthur?
This. About a month ago, I was in the garden next to the wall that separates us from the charity clinic. Suddenly, I thought I heard a sound, like a child whimpering. It stopped. And a moment later, this note came over the wall, wrapped around a stone.
What's it say?
Help me, for God's sake, Harlan Ward.
Arthur, how would you like to have some fun?
Like what?
Like sneaking out tonight and going over the wall to the charity ward? What do you say? It would break the monotony a little.
I suppose there's no real harm in it.
Of course not. I'd go alone, but I'll need help scaling the wall. Will you do it?
All right. I'll go with you.
Give me a hand and I'll lift you. Be careful when you drop. Ready?
Go ahead. There's a charity building over there. The one with the lights in the basement window.
Come on.
Let's crawl over. Maybe we can see something. Shh. Listen. Can you make out what he's saying?
No, I can barely hear.
Good Lord. What was that?
Probably some patient having the DTs.
Let's have a look. Easy, it wouldn't do to get caught now.
See anything?
It's some sort of laboratory. I can see Grimshaw and Voynin and something else. What? There's a child with its back toward me.
Now take it quietly. It will be easier. Please, no! It will all be over soon. You won't remember anything.
No, I don't want to go!
Voynin, give it to him.
No!
Shut him up, Voynin!
Good Lord. What was it? What did they do to that child?
Mother, that wasn't a child. It was a midget. The smallest midget I've ever seen.
What were they doing?
Trying to give it some sort of injection. When it resisted, Buena knocked it out.
What do you suppose they were doing to it?
I don't know, Arthur. All I know is that when it fell, it had the face of Harlan Ward.
All the way back to our room, my brain was working like some frantic pinball machine. Only the score somehow wouldn't add up. The pieces were there, all right. A crazy old doctor, a brutal assistant, a private sanitarium, and a midget with a dead man's face. I thought that when I got back to our room, I'd have some time to think about it. I'd forgotten about our friend, the happiness boy, Count Crakey.
I caught you.
Fine, you've caught us. Now, how about crawling back into the woodwork like a good little count?
Where were you?
Mink hunting. Arthur and I like to go mink hunting at night.
You make fun of Count Crakey? I shall report you to Dr. Voynin.
You'd better not if you know what's good for you.
So, you threaten me. Me, Count Crakey. I shall scream for help. Help! Help!
Did you hurt him?
Just knocked him out.
What do we do now?
Put him to bed. Hope that when he wakes up in the morning, he's forgotten the whole thing.
And if he hasn't?
He's too crazy for them to take seriously anyway. Come on, let's get him back into bed. To sleep in my own room. And the next thing I felt was the sharp jab of the hypodermic needle in my left arm.
Hold it.
It'll be useless to struggle, Mr. Doherty. In a moment, your motor nerves will be completely paralyzed.
What's this about, Grimshaw?
I might ask the same of you. My good friend Count Crakey informs me you and Mr. K decided to do some snooping earlier tonight. He followed you and saw you climb the wall.
Crakey's insane.
Mr. Doherty, that is a matter of opinion.
Crakey, what is this?
Perhaps my assistant, Dr. Grimshaw, would be good enough to explain.
Assistant?
Yes. You see, I am the actual head of the Grimshaw Sanatorium.
Count Crakey feigns many delusions, Mr. Doherty. But in this case, he is telling the truth. Count Crakey is actually Professor Ernst Hassler. Professor Hassler and I worked together in the Berlin Neurological Institute before and during the last war.
Unfortunately, my political affiliations with the Third Reich were under investigation by the War Crimes Commission. However, Dr. Grimshaw managed to smuggle me into this country, where I masqueraded as a mental patient, in order that we might continue certain experiments which were interrupted by the American Army.
I can imagine the sort of experiments you conducted.
You and your friend Mr. K will discover their exact nature very shortly, Mr. Doherty. It is a magnificent opportunity to serve science.
I passed out. And the next thing I knew, I was coming to in a different room and hearing the voices of Voynin, Grimshaw, and Crakey as if from a great distance.
Pituitrin.
Pituitrin.
4 cc's.
4 cc's.
How are the measurements?
Reducing rapidly.
We'll operate at once. Have Voynin start the anesthesia.
Very well, Doctor. Come back.
When I came to again, I had a blinding headache. I began to wonder if Crakey and Grimshaw weren't doing something to drive me insane, because I lost all sense of perspective. The room seemed to grow in size. I don't know how much time passed, but one day Crakey came into the room with a bundle in his arms about the size of a newborn baby. The bundle was my friend, Arthur Kay. And worse yet, I was exactly the same size that he was.
Let me out of here.
Let me out.
Allow me to congratulate you, gentlemen. How are you feeling?
You dirty monster.
I'm disappointed, gentlemen. Do you not feel privileged to be a part of an experiment that will place me at the very top rank of the world's endocrinologists?
What are you doing to us, you madman?
It has long been established, gentlemen, that dwarfism and giantism result from injury to or malfunction of the pituitary and thyroid glands. The interlock between these glands was thought to be a hormone. I have discovered that this was incorrect. It was an enzyme. An enzyme I isolated some years ago. I was well on the way to synthesis in Germany when the surrender interrupted me. The interruption also limited the number and type of subjects on whom I could experiment. I was forced to find others.
Such as Harlan Ward?
Mr. Ward was only a control experiment.
I suppose you plan the same for us?
No, gentlemen. For you, I have reserved a special privilege. You, gentlemen, will be the first to test the full effects of the enzyme. In short, I intend that you, Mr. Kay, and you, Mr. Doherty, when the experiment is completed, will emerge as perfectly healthy, normal individuals. Except, of course, that you will be only 5 inches tall.
The days and nights that followed were a living nightmare. A nightmare from which Arthur and I awoke for brief periods to find ourselves in a strange new world. A huge, frightening world where everything seemed enlarged 100 times. When we finally emerged, we found ourselves imprisoned in a tiny mouse cage. Judging by the relative size of things, we could not have been more than 5 inches tall. Now we realized the experiment was at an end. That from now on, it was either escape or be destroyed.
How's it coming, Arthur? Another moment. I think I'll have this lock worked loose. And if we escape, then what?
We'll worry about that after we get out of this mouse cage.
Suppose we don't make it?
At least you've written the story on that scrap of paper. Someone may find it and read it.
Nobody will believe it.
Then why did you bother to write it?
I don't know. I suppose I want the world to know what happened to me.
That does it. Help me push the door open.
Now what?
The first job is getting down to the floor. I think we can make it by sliding down the telephone cord. Are you game?
Go ahead. I'm right behind you.
Easy now.
Look out!
That does it. Now, if we can figure out a way to get out of the room.
Well, that should be... Uh-oh. Listen.
Somebody's coming.
It must be Crakey. We've got to hide.
Here. The crate in the fireplace.
He'll kill us if he finds us.
Stay quiet.
Well, my friends, time for feeding. I trust that you... So... You have managed to break out. It won't do, you know. There is no way you could have gotten out of the room with the door and window locked. I know you are in here. I would advise you to save yourselves trouble and give up. Very well, my tiny friends. If you prefer to play the game of cat and mouse, then I shall be happy to furnish the cat. There is no way you can get out.
What now? He's gone for the cat.
If that monster ever gets in here, we're goners. There must be...
Wait a minute. What?
Do you see that thin strand of wire running along the molding?
What about it?
It's the automatic fire alarm. When the alarm is tripped by a fire or short circuit, all the locks are sprung so that the patients can escape from their rooms. If I can short that wire before Crakey lets the cat into the building...
Let's go.
There's a tiny sliver of steel from the cage on the floor. I'll work with that. You keep an ear to the door.
Go ahead.
This insulation is tough as rawhide. Rush, be stuck.
Hurry up, Arthur, for God's sake.
There it is. Stand away. I'm going to short it. Ready?
Okay.
We made it. There goes the door.
Let's make a run for it down the hall. If we can get to the garden, we've got a chance.
I smell smoke. The short may have actually started a fire. Come on.
Wait a minute. I have to go back. The manuscript.
Don't be a fool. There's no time. Come on.
You go ahead. I'll catch up.
Hurry up. I'll wait in the hall.
Only a second. I've got it. Come on. There's nothing to stop us now. Arthur? Where are you? It's funny. Arthur? Arthur! Arthur, what's happened to you?
Meow!
This is the record found in a fountain pen cover in the burned-out hallway of Dr. Grimshaw's sanitarium. There's nothing to add, except that the fire which destroyed the sanitarium and killed so many of its occupants, including Dr. Grimshaw and Dr. Voyna, was definitely of incendiary nature. It is believed by the fire chief that some small creature, possibly a mouse, chewed the insulation off the wire and short-circuited the system. The two patients, John Doherty and Arthur Kay, vanished completely after the fire, and their remains were never found. Whether the manuscript which you have just heard is authentic, or whether it was the work of one of the more demented inmates of the sanitarium, we leave to your judgment.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is an NBC Radio Network production. X-1.